In our study, we are going to be going into great detail on what I believe is one of the most important and rapidly growing non-Christian cults of our day. It is known as the Black Muslim Cult, or, as some have termed it, the Nation of Islam. But whatever name we wish to apply to it, it is here, and it is penetrating many of the ghettos of the United States, and it is holding out hope to many black people who are seeking some relief from the great oppression which has descended upon large segments of our populace. In the furor of racial tensions in Africa and in the United States, so characteristic of our times, a new force is stirring throughout the Negro world, and it is one to be reckoned with by responsible persons of all races. This is designated, as I said, the Black Muslim Movement, and its membership is conservatively estimated at more than 150,000 persons, all of them Negro. Now, there's good evidence that the hardcore of the Muslims in the United States does not exceed 35,000, but they have more than 84 temples and a membership goal of 20 million in the United States. Muslim real estate holdings and investments are scattered across America, and they are sufficiently solvent to propose the erection of an Islamic center in Chicago, Illinois, at a cost of $20 million. It is quite obvious, therefore, that we are dealing with a well-organized group of individuals who have specific goals and are moving forward towards their realization. There can be little doubt that the Black Muslim Movement is propelled by a fervent nationalistic spirit on the part of black people. And the most disconcerting feature of its growth is the fact that it is capitalized upon the Christian Church's apparent reticence, in some quarters, to support vigorously the rights of Negroes guaranteed under the Constitution. Now, at the risk of getting into political conflicts and racial tensions, let me point out that the Christian Church never really seriously got interested in the plight of the black man until long after the fact had been attended to by other agencies, whereas the church ought to have been in the forefront of the crusade for minority groups in the United States. Now, that does not mean that the Christian Church has not done many things. It does not mean that the church has not extended herself charitably and in the spirit of Christian love in many areas, for she has. It does not mean that the church has not cared for the black man, for quite obviously the evidence is clear that the church has. What I am trying to say is that the Christian Church did not make a basic thrust of leadership in this field. And because of this, it left the door wide open for other groups, cultic and otherwise, to come along and to charge the church with negligence. Surely ours is the task of being the Good Samaritan. Who is my neighbor? Obviously the man who needs me. And the church should have been directing her activities in this area long before she was forced to by the exigencies of the day. Now, in addition to this, the black Muslims make the consistent charge that Christianity is, and I'm quoting, the white man's religion, ignoring totally the fact that Jesus Christ was an Asiatic, a Semite, a descendant of Isaac, half-brother of the Arabs through Ishmael, and if anyone reads carefully Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 to 12, it becomes apparent that the whole story is spelled out for anyone to read, including those who are devotees of black Islam. Now, this Christianity claims closer ties to any supposed Islamic brotherhood than any Negro Muslim movement ever could. Christianity is certainly not the white man's religion. It is the religion of the Jew and the Arab through Judaism. And any national connection with the Negro race of either a black Judaism or a black Islam is totally foreign to the Bible, the Quran, and all the available evidence of anthropology and genetics. Yet despite these facts, the black Muslims move forward with a militant, vitriolic, and denunciatory spirit against all white people, merely because they are white, not because they belong to a religion other than Islam. Any student of comparative religions will tell you immediately that Islam launched its great crusade against the religions of the world on the basis of a holy war to establish that there is one God, Allah, and Muhammad is the prophet. Islam was not concerned with racial issues. She is not concerned with it today. That is true historic Islam. But when we deal with black Islam, we are dealing here in America with a group that is concerned with the color of one's skin. And therefore, it is a racist form of Islam. Now, the official view of the Muslim religion concerning Elijah Muhammad, prophet of the black Muslim movement, is one of outright disdain. The Muslim religion takes, if we may use the phrase, a very dim view of Elijah Muhammad. The Quran forbids anyone to discriminate against another on the basis of his skin. And it's an open fact that there are millions of Muslims who are neither black nor brown, and who are indeed yellow and white in many quarters of the earth. The Federation of Islamic Association, the official Muslim organization in this country, has repudiated the black Muslims, claiming, and I'm quoting now, that it is not affiliated and is not recognized as truly Muslim. Close quote. Now, this black Muslim movement, therefore, is characterized by militant, vigorous racism, which describes all white men as devils and enemies of the black race by nature. They vigorously reject any form of integration under the Constitution of the United States or of any other country, preferring an all-black state of their own. They have not hesitated to suggest that 7 or 8 of the states of the United States be allotted to them for the creation of their own separate nation. And the black Muslims are also vigorously opposed to intermarriage between the black race and the white race, and are segregationists par excellence, surpassing even white extremists of certain sections of our country. In the black Muslim movement, we can see emerging the outlines of what is most certainly a black Ku Klux Klan, which wants not equality with the white race, but which maintains instead the intrinsic superiority of the black race. It is a swing of the historical and anthropological pendulum, liberally seasoned with a hatred that defies description. It's a movement born of many centuries of slavery and degradation, and unfortunately, in the United States, a hatred not totally unjustified. Now, this is seen in the light of the exploitation of the Negro by unscrupulous and unprincipled white men who have nodded to the Emancipation Proclamation but have subtly disobeyed each of its precepts, and those of the Supreme Court in favor of a segregation of the black man, both racial and social. We are reaping the fruit of this today, and Christians must become concerned, because the gospel is both salvatory and social, and we have a dual responsibility, not only to proclaim Jesus Christ and live the Christian life, but also to minister to the needs of a world which is perishing. Black, white, brown, and yellow, independent of pigmentation or the absence of it, a world that is perishing without the Son of God. A world that God so loved that he was willing to send Jesus Christ to save. Black Islam presents the awesome spectacle of a growing black funnel engulfing potentially millions of black people in the United States, who, though they have no sympathy for its religious fervor, know that in a number of areas it speaks the truth concerning the exploitation of the black man. Many Negroes support the black Muslim movement because it is a voice in defense of their rights. The voice speaks with increasing frequency and intensity throughout the major Negro population centers of America: New York, Washington, Detroit, Chicago, Los Angeles. And the black Muslim movement sweeps into its fold daily by the enunciation of a militant nationalism. Those underprivileged and exploited Negroes who are promised the eschatological dream of a pan-Negro brotherhood, in which at last the white man will have to recognize their independence, and if the black Muslims have their way, their superiority. Now, many Negroes, though non-Muslims, and this is important, give aid, comfort, and support to Elijah Muhammad's growing kingdom as a type of protest vote against race-shy politicians and segregationists of all varieties, Christians as well as non-Christian. It is sad to have to admit that such occurrences as Little Rock, Birmingham, Watts, Rochester, and Memphis have only served to pour fuel upon the fires so zealously fanned by the black Muslim movement. Every instance where they can legitimately show persecution of the black man, violation of his constitutional rights, and his privileges as an American citizen, only serves to demonstrate the validity of their basic charge that the white man intends to always be the slave master of the Negro race. And that's a direct quote, slave master. And through this, of course, this type of psychology, they are penetrating ghettos where people are looking for a ray of hope in the midst of ever-deepening darkness. Even though these things are demonstrably false, even though they can be refuted from numerous sources, it still serves the propaganda purposes of Elijah Muhammad. There is a new spirit abroad today among the Negro in America, aided and abetted by the ignorant, the uninformed, and the lawbreaker, whatever his apparently legal maneuver may be. It is forging a solid wedge of discontent, unrest, and antagonism toward the white man, and even in some instances toward Negro leaders who have attempted a moderate approach, fully aware of the grave dangers inherent in any Negro insurrection. The black Muslim movement is a fuse that could ignite racial, cultural, political, and economic explosions that could do irreparable damage to our country and to its image abroad, an image which has been marred and scarred by the excesses of a few on both sides of the racial controversy. These seem willing to sacrifice the future welfare of our nation for a continuance of something we fought one of the bloodiest wars in all human history to eradicate, a war in which white brother faced white brother as enemies in order to free black slaves, that they might become black brothers and citizens of a truly United States of America, free from bigotry, slavery, exploitation, and oppression, a just government, in the words of the great emancipator, with malice toward none and charity for all. Though we may not have fully attained these things, because we are limited and sinful, and because these things will always limit the development of the ideal, no matter how high that ideal may be and be set by mankind. The black Muslim movement, by its insistence upon a separate black state within the United States, will not add constructively to the picture, but instead will divide further the federal union, and is therefore untenable because it is un-American. If the black race were given its own state, what then of the yellow race and the brown race? Would they too not have a just claim? And if these be granted, what then of the union? The answer to all this is, of course, that the black Muslims will never get their state. For the cornerstone of American government is, as Lincoln once put it, the federal union. It must be preserved. There can be no doubt that it will be. The danger, however, has not been removed and will not be until the general public and Christians in particular become aware of the challenge of the black Muslim movement. Black Islam, then, is not an insignificant cult. It is not a cult that the Christian church can afford to become complacent about or ignore. Instead, it directly challenges the very foundation of historic Christianity. And paradoxically, it attempts to do this in terms taken from Scripture itself. To better evaluate the black Muslims, some understanding of the historical and theological roots from which the cult sprang is necessary. Such an evaluation, I believe, is necessary to gain an understanding of the psychological and spiritual motivations and drives which seemingly compel these zealous and sincere people upon a course even they cannot fully understand. That neither they nor those who oppose them can accurately predict what the outcome will be gives pause for thought in the light of the growing tensions of racial conflict so apparent in America today. There can be little doubt that the American Negro has been exploited, oppressed, and suppressed by the white man in not a few states of our country, in the North as well as in the South. Emerging as they have from slavery and denied their civil rights in far too many instances, the American Negro has by and large been forced into a ghetto-like existence. This is evidenced by his concentration in such places as New York's Harlem and its equivalents in Detroit, Chicago, Washington, and, of course, Los Angeles. Elijah Muhammad has capitalized upon this, emphasizing what he calls, quote, the knowledge of self, close quote, and stimulates pride in the black man, pride in his race, his heritage, and his abilities. Riding the crest of this wave of racial pride, the black Muslims have made enormous strides. According to the late Louis Lomax, distinguished Negro journalist who made an intensive survey of the black Muslim movement, the following observations should be carefully weighed by anyone who wants to know what's really going on in the mind of the American Negro today. Wrote Mr. Lomax, quote, "The same general approach, teaching race, pride as knowledge of self, accounts for the success the black Muslims have among low-income Negroes. For these people are in something of a prison, too. They see themselves as failures and need some accounting for what they are and what they do, why they are not and what they are not. These needs are met when a wave of the downtrodden proclaim the divinity of the black man, blame the white man for his sin and lawlessness, and then go on to herald the impending destruction of the white devil." In other words, what Lomax is saying is that Elijah Muhammad has gotten to the crest of this wave, and he has proclaimed the divinity of the black man, blaming the white man for all the black man's sin and lawlessness, and blaming the white devil for all of the difficulties which the black man faces. Because of this, a large segment of the Negro populace, a growing segment, is beginning to listen, and some have accepted and believe fervently. Lomax went on, "Thus it is that a growing segment of the American Negro population, beset with economic, psychological pressures, and remembering only too well a history of slavery, limited emancipation, and Jim Crow discrimination in the realms of education, economics, and civil rights, is beginning to listen, if not to follow the exhortations of Elijah Muhammad. Goaded by a groundswell of nationalism prevalent throughout the world, and badgered by cries of brotherhood within the black race to the exclusion of all others, the American Negro finds himself at the crossroads in an era when crises have become the commonplace. Should he trust the United States government, dominated by white legislators, in which he feels he has little voice to guarantee him the rights and privileges legally accorded him 100 years ago, but never fulfilled? Or shall he cast his lot with the nationalistic movement, founded in racial pride and promising him dignity and a life of equality, coupled with the respect of all races? This is the dilemma in which many Negroes find themselves today, and the psychological appeal cannot be underestimated, especially among a Negro populace which has suffered much and is today striving for recognition and justice." Mr. Lomax has, of course, performed a great service for those interested in studying the black Muslim movement. For he, in company with Eric Lincoln, whose classic volume, The Black Muslim Movement in America, is by all odds the finest objective evaluation of the work of Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X, now in print, has carefully pinpointed many of the difficulties which face us, and particularly the Church of Jesus Christ, who would reconcile the black man to God, recognizing that all men, regardless of the color of their skin, are in need of that reconciliation. The history of the black Muslim movement began with Wallace Fard, an Islamic Negro who in 1930 appeared among the Detroit Negro community. He spoke softly and intelligently and appealed to the Negro mind about proper living and civil rights. At that particular time, he utilized the Bible and the study of the Quran and rejected the teaching of Jesus Christ that one should turn the other cheek to one's enemies. He built quite a large following, and then Fard disappeared. He was referred to as the prophet. But his disappearance was not apparent until he had trained one Elijah Poole, now known as Elijah Muhammad. Fard left behind him two manuals, The Secret Ritual of the Nation of Islam and Teachings for the Lost Found Nation of Islam in a Mathematical Way. The first of these works was and still is orally transmitted. The second is written in symbolic language, requiring translation and interpretation by the Prophet. Fard founded the University of Islam and the Muslim Girls Training Class, and a militant organization for the protection of Muslims known as the Fruit of Islam. At the end of 1933, this organization was progressing so well that Fard withdrew from its leadership. Shortly thereafter, he disappeared. No one knows where Wallace Fard went, but he was deified shortly thereafter by Elijah Poole, nee Elijah Muhammad today, and was called the incarnation or the manifestation on earth of Allah. There was an interesting interview between Elijah Muhammad and the New York Herald Tribune, which attempted to penetrate Muslim theology not too long ago. I'd like to give some documentation as to Muslim theological views, because a great deal has been said about it, but not from authoritative sources. This is from Elijah Muhammad himself, the highest voice in black Islam. The New York Herald Tribune reporter said, quote, "I asked Mr. Muhammad about this, that is, about Fard and about the early work of the movement. I said, is there a mystery about what happened to Mr. Fard? No, sir, there is no mystery about what happened to him, he answered. Did Mr. Muhammad say what happened? He is just waiting for the proper time to deliver speeches. Did Mr. Muhammad consider Mr. Fard, whose name he pronounces Farad, to be not only a holy man, but actually a divine person? He is God himself. He is the one that we have been looking for the last 2,000 years to come. He is the one, and his word bears witness to the fact that he is the one. And you know him? I asked. I do know him, he answered. Is Mr. Muhammad in touch with him now? Yes, he replied, spiritually. I asked him about a successor. Did he have in mind the identity of his own successor, since he himself is known as the inspired messenger of Allah? His answer to this was a swift one. No, that is not my job to do anything like that. This work has been put upon me to do by the will of Almighty Allah, who has appointed me. There will be no such thing as a successor, because everything will be guided according to the will of Allah, and whatever he reveals will be carried on. It is like today we have the sun and moon and stars up there, and they are not changed for others. I asked him about the membership figures in his approximately 80 temples around the country, saying that law enforcement officers seemed agreed that the hardcore membership of the black Muslims is between 5,000 and 6,000 members, with a less attached number of followers between 150 and 300,000. He answered, I don't even know that, because we don't have a record showing the figures. In the theology of the black Muslim movement, Wallace Fard, then, was God, or Allah himself. And it is no exaggeration to state that the black Muslims worship a black God, whom they say is awaiting the proper time to return and proclaim the triumph of black Islam. Of course, should a death certificate and the discovery of a grave identifying Wallace Fard's remains ever be found, this would doubtless embarrass the black Muslim movement considerably, though the wily Mr. Poole would no doubt explain that resurrection was imminent. It was Mr. Fard who taught the black Muslims that they did not owe any allegiance to America or the American flag. And after Elijah Muhammad's break with the movement following Fard's disappearance, he abandoned this philosophy, at least outwardly. Eric Lincoln has described the condition which followed the split. He said, Fard became identified with the god Allah, being thus deified. He was worshipped with prayer and sacrifice. Muhammad, who had served Allah, naturally assumed the mantle of prophet, which Allah had worn during his mission in Detroit. Today, Muhammad is referred to both as a prophet and more often as the messenger of Allah. The black Muslims have come far under Muhammad. He has given them temples and schools, apartment houses and grocery stores, restaurants and farms. Most important of all, he has given them a new sense of dignity, a conviction that they are more than equal to the white man and destined to rule the earth. It's interesting to note also that on February 26th, in the calendar of Black Islam, the notation is for Savior's Day, the birthday of Wallace Fard, and cards and presents are exchanged. He is recognized, therefore, as an incarnation of divinity. It ought to be pointed out that the movement had about 8,000 adherents when Fard departed, and that Elijah Muhammad moved the headquarters from Detroit to Chicago, and there set up new headquarters and changed the emphasis into a militant movement of black people. Fard's approach was slightly different. Elijah Muhammad's was direct and produced fantastic results, as Mr. Lincoln has pointed out. Should be also drawn to the attention of students of black Islam that Elijah Muhammad was jailed between the years 1942 and 1946 for sedition and for inciting his followers not to register for the draft. We also ought to take into consideration the fact that he lives today in an 18-room mansion and owns two Cadillacs and one Lincoln Continental. His six sons and entire family are involved in the operation of Black Islam, and his oldest son is alleged to be in line for inheritance to the Islamic throne. Today, the disciples of Elijah Muhammad propagandize in major Negro population centers throughout the United States. Their methods of evangelism are visiting jails and places where Negroes congregate in their particular areas of ghettos. They hand out flyers on street corners. They sell Elijah Muhammad's paper, which tells about Muhammad speaking and proclaiming to the world the message of black Islam. They utilize radio spots, and they are very, very adept at working together through communal usage of properties in attracting the attention of the community to the success that they have managed to attain by working together as black people for a common goal. They have attracted the media's attention this way. And none was more successful in this than the late Malcolm X, a man who had been involved in drug traffic and in pimping and in every conceivable kind of crime virtually before his conversion, if I may use that term, to black Islam.